Okay, so today I want to talk about commercial banks and what their role is and what they might face moving forward, whether it's positive or negative impacts for these banks. Now, for these commercial banks, what's really interesting is they have a huge effect on the economy of every country that has these banks. And, every country does have banks. Commercial banks, at least that I mean, there might be some little countries, but I mean, even most of these guys have banks, or at least banks that operate within their own currencies. And so banks are incredibly important in facilitating the whole economy around the world. And one thing that these banks do is they create money. Now, I'm not talking about central banks creating money, and central banks do create money. Now, it's kind of different around the world. Some central banks can only create credit or debt. They can only lend money, and they can't actually create money, and some can. It depends on the bank and the country that the central bank is from, and all of the regulations and laws to it. But, for example, the US Federal Reserve, it can't really print money. I mean, it can only create loans that, I mean, no, they don't have to pay it back. Whoever lends money from the Fed doesn't really have to pay it back. So, I mean, to that extent, you could call it printing money. And it's, I guess it's true, but commercial banks also create money. Now you have to kind of define what money is for you to call commercial bank lending money creation. And so the way that commercial banks create money is they just lend consumers money. Now that might be, that might seem very contrary to what a lot of people, especially who aren't very familiar with banking, might think that commercial banks do. So, a lot of people think that commercial banks are just this financial intermediary. So, the common belief of people who don't really understand banking too well, and I'm not saying I'm too familiar with banking because I'm not, but I'm just trying to express what I think the whole how the banking system works. And so commercial banks will basically give out loans, and they write these loans out of thin air to the consumer, to the borrower, for whatever. I mean, if they're getting a car loan or a mortgage, or it doesn't matter what type of loan, the banks write those loans out of thin air. Now you might ask, okay, well, how can you write a loan out of thin air? Right? I mean, you have to lend someone money, right? You have to have money. And so the common thinking is that these banks take deposits and they lend out those deposits. And that's how they work as a financial intermediary. Now, that's not really the case in how they work in practical, in the practical world. Because the whole world is how money is stored, I guess. I mean, it's just stored on a computer. Now, most people, when they keep cash, they put it in a bank account. And they have it in their bank account. They're not putting it under the mattress. They don't keep it under the pillow. I mean, they don't keep that much in their wallet anyways. And so a lot of it is in their bank account. Now you might think, okay, well, this bank just transfers this money from mine to theirs and back. Once I want to take my money away, but that's not really what happens. Now, because everything's done on a computer, I mean, it doesn't matter. If someone adds $100 to their account, you're happy. Someone takes away $100, you're sad. But how many actual currency units? I mean, it doesn't matter because everything's done on a computer. And so let's say I want to take a loan from a mortgage from bank. And so I go to this bank. And I have an account, and on my account, I don't have any money yet, but I take down a $100,000 loan, $100,000 mortgage. And so the bank basically writes, just writes $100,000 on my account out of thin air. Now, on the bank's balance sheet, you know, they'll have an extra asset and they'll have an extra liability. And their asset is your loan, and their liability is they have to pay you, right? And so now they have more debt. So now they have an extra deposit. So if is now you have $100,000 in your bank account. So they just create this loan, this money out of thin air. Now, it's not money for the bank, because the bank doesn't really make money off of creating the loan. Now, they make money off of the interest on the loan, but they don't actually make any money just by creating an extra loan. And so the bank now has, you know, just a bigger balance sheet. They have more assets and they have more liabilities. And so by doing this, they can create a lot more money. And the money supply that they create is, it's credit. It's not actual, you know, currency. It's not physical currency that you could touch. And this process all started back in the day. I mean, it started a long, long time ago. It started, I suppose, somewhere even when they were using gold. You know, it started off as this fractional reserve system. And so what would happen is, you know, some bank would have, let's say, you know, a lot of gold. Back when gold was money and gold was what backed currency. And so gold was basically money. And so what the banks would do is they had a lot of gold. And people didn't want to carry that gold when they were walking around because, you know, I mean, if you were kind of poor, I guess, and all you had was 1 ounce of gold, it doesn't matter. You could carry it everywhere you go. But if you had, you know, a 5 pounds of gold, you don't want to carry 5 pounds of gold around with you everywhere. Because first of all, you could lose it pretty easily. I mean, you're going to get robbed. And second of all, it's really heavy. So, I mean, even if you don't get robbed, you're probably going to get your back is going to ache after you're done walking from, you know, home to work, which is, remember those stories where, you know, your parents traveled 10 miles, whatever, really, really long distance to school, came back, and now they're just, now the kids are just have it so easy. You know, they have school buses, they have whatever, they have buses, they have taxis, they have Uber. But, you know, for that, I mean, people, when they travel to work, come back home, I mean, no one wants to carry that much gold around with them, and some would keep it in their houses. But it's just still not as easy as paper money. And so, you know, banks began to issue bank notes, which you could essentially just exchange for gold. You know, you could go around banks and, you know, exchange the bank note for the gold. And so, you know, bank notes were basically as good as gold because people had trust in the banks. And people had trust in the banks because the banks held a bunch of gold reserves. And so now banks would, you know, let's say I would go and take on a loan from the bank. Well, the bank could just write this little note and just give it to me out of thin air, right there. Just more credit, which is also used as money today, is created. Now, their actual gold does not increase, which you know, is an issue if everybody at that time wants to take their money out of the bank, because the bank won't be able to serve that. And so, you know, the bank's going to have a lot of troubles. But, you know, most of the time, people don't want to take all of their money out of the bank at once. That's very uncommon. And it happened in the 1930s, and all the banks, most of them just collapsed. And so the, you know, federal government decided to basically put an insurance on your, on your deposits, on your bank deposits. So, you know, your checking, your savings accounts, And so you can't lose, all of the accounts with under $250,000, I think it was, could be wrong, somewhere around that number is protected. So the bank basically can't default on money under a quarter of a million. But if it's over that, I guess it could basically fail to give you that money back in physical currency if you demanded it. But nowadays, people don't take all their money out of banks for no reason. Now, I saw a bank, some type of European bank. I forgot which country it was, but it was a European bank that was that was giving out negative interest rates on bank deposits. Now, that's just incredibly, incredibly unreasonable, because you're basically lending money to a bank for them to tax you for them to make profit off of you. Negative yielding interest rate. That is just uncommon and unreasonable under a normal circumstance. But of course, it's not really an uncommon circumstance, because we're in an uncommon circumstance right now. I forgot the country. I'm gonna have to try to remember it. Okay, so it was a bank called the Danske Bank. Danske, I don't know how to pronounce it, but it's a Danish bank. And now it's charging negative rates. It's charging money for you to lend the bank money. Think of you getting a mortgage and the bank paying you to get that mortgage. Well, it's basically, the bank's not paying you, but you have to pay the bank to keep your money at the bank, which, the bank uses your money and takes money from you to use your money. Now, of course, I think what that's going to do is a lot of people are going to take their money out of the bank maybe change it for paper money. And if a bank doesn't have enough paper money, paper currency units to actually serve your, withdrawal, then what's going to happen is you're going to run out of money and something bad is going to happen there. But of course, a lot of people might just move their money from the bank account into, brokerage account or something like that. And of course, a lot of people are just going to spend their money. And I think that's the effect that the Danish want. They just want people to go out and spend their money to, create this demand to raise their inflation goals, targets. And, of course, that's just the artificially low interest rates is basically just a tax on savers, which does not end up well in the long run. It could work in the short run, but in the long run, when everyone's just full of debt, it doesn't help to put on more debt. Whether it's short term or the long term, you're just going through a short period of tough times to add more debt, or you're going through just everlasting adding debt. It doesn't matter. You just need less debt, and you don't help it. You don't help the issue by taking on more debt. And look, periods where asset prices are going down, it's painful. Periods where unemployment rises, where wages fall, where your ability to spend decreases, it's painful. But you have to go through that period eventually. And the more debt you take on, the bigger that issue gets, except also the further in the future that issue will have to be faced by you. And so you're going to have to face it anyways, except you're just moving the problem into the future. But I want to go back to banking as of now. And so, if the interest rates have to rise eventually, whether it's because things get back together and the central banks around the world become more hawkish, or it's just because, I mean, look at how high the debt is. And people aren't going to want to lend, whether to the government or to individuals or to, you know, whatever companies. People aren't going to want to lend for such a low rate that they are now forever. So once rates rise, well, first of all, banks get to create this money out of thin air, especially for long-term interest rates. That's what matters for banks. You know, when the long-term interest rates rise, what banks are allowed to do is they could charge a lot more on their consumers. And so they'll be making a lot more money with the loans that they're creating out of thin air. Now, the problem is if the inflation rate goes higher than the interest rate and you get negative real interest rates, then it doesn't really matter. Then you're still losing money if you're lending money. But as long as the spread between the long-term bank lending rate and the real interest rate, as long as the spread is high, and of course, the yield on the bank lending interest rate is higher than the, you know, real interest rate, the higher the spread, the more money the banks make. And so what you want is, of course, high real interest rates and low interest rates on the short end of the yield, you know, because the banks, how they borrow money is they borrow on the short end. And so they'll borrow short-term loans. And a lot of it is done in the interbank lending system. A lot of it is done in the repo market. A lot of it is just done with, the other commercial banks, which is the interbank lending system. And so with this whole system, the banks want the short-term interest rates to be low because that's how they borrow their money. But they want the long-term interest rates to be high. Now, for banks being able to create money out of thin air, this thing is partially, I guess you could, you know, some people say it's restricted by their reserve requirements. So for example, they have a 10% reserve requirement rate. So let's say I want to lend $100,000. I need $10,000 just as a reserve. And usually they keep the bank reserves at the Federal Reserve. Kind of like if I keep my money at the bank, the bank keeps their money at the Fed. Same type of system, except on the Fed's balance sheet that shows as a liability to the commercial banks. And so it's just this system with, it's got a ton of strings, and for all this regulation and rules, that's what makes those systems complicated, at least so much more complicated than it really needs to be. And a lot of it is just they're trying to avoid breaking rules that were set to prevent them from doing things. So they're kind of making loopholes around the whole system. And so that's what makes it so complicated, because they're breaking rules, but they're doing it through these loopholes. So they're not directly breaking the rules or the rules. And so, you know, what you end up having is a lot of these banks they're partially, but also not really restricted to their reserve requirements. And so how that works is, well, if I want to make a loan, if I only have 10% right now, and let's say I have $100,000 worth of existing loans that I'm loaning out to someone else for a mortgage, and I only have 10K reserves, and you know my reserve requirement is 10%, so that essentially means I'm not allowed to lend any more money. Now, that's not really the case, because banks obviously have a solution to that. And, you know, the solution is I will go out and lend money, and then I'll, you know, just try to find a reserve money to kind of replace that money afterwards. And so how I could do that is I could take on more loans. I could take on more short-term loans. Now I have more cash. And if I have more cash, well, it doesn't matter if, you know, I lend out more money in reserves. I also have more debt, but I have more cash. And if I have more cash, well, then, you know, let's say I lend out another 50K, right? Then I borrow 5,000 in cash, whether it's short-term or long-term, it doesn't matter. I borrowed another $5,000. And so now I have $15,000 for a reserve, and I have $150,000 for my loaning out. And so the whole system is fine again. And so I just made extra money out of thin air. And I'm not really restrained by the reserve requirement. And so they removed the reserve requirement last year for 1 year, and they implemented it back. And that didn't really do much, especially since banks had so many reserves. And they just had so many that it didn't matter. And now they still have so many that it doesn't really matter if it's 10%. And, you know, in general, it doesn't really matter that much anyways. Now, they I guess, to some degree, it has a little bit of an effect, because if I wasn't restrained at all, I wouldn't need to take on an extra loan. And so I wouldn't have to pay extra interest. I wouldn't have to take on extra risk. But, you know, the effect is not a huge effect that completely restricts their ability to create loans, to create credit out of thin air. And so the money creation by the banks is credit. They can't print money. They don't have a printing press. It's illegal for anybody other than the central banks to print money, to print the physical currency. I mean, I can't go out and print a US dollar. That I'm not a bank. Even if I were, I would still not be able to. Only the central banks can do that. But banks can create credit, which people basically, I mean, they have trust in credit as much as they have trust in paper currency, which I guess are both, I mean, they're both fiat. They're not backed up by anything. They're backed up by trust, both of them. Now, I guess at least paper has some degree of value, because, I mean, you could burn it if you're stuck on an island. I mean, you could use that as lighting fire, for lighting a fire. But for, you know, just numbers on a computer, credit that banks create, commercial banks, that you can't really use for anything. It's just a number on a computer. But people have trust in it, and so you could exchange these numbers on the computer with other people. And when you do that, I mean, it's as good as money. It's as good as paper currency. It's as good as any other type of currency. And so commercial banks have a really big role in controlling the money supply. Now, there's many definitions to money, but for money that, you know, for things that are generally accepted as money by, you know, everyday people, that you would include as money. And so will they create a lot more of this money in the future? Will they, you know, stop creating so much currency, so much credit, so much money? It's hard to say, but they have been slowing that down in the past few years. I mean, they've been slowing that down for a long time now. You know, if you look back, you know, 100 years ago, they were creating a lot more of that than they are now on a year-to-year basis. And so I think relative to the total total supply. So percent change over a year. And I think, you know, so they've been slowing that down. And so if that's what ends up happening, then you could see the money supply through commercial banks decreasing. Now, whether you know, fiscal spending and fiscal deficits will make up for a shortage of commercial bank credits, I guess it's possible. And, you know, it's quite likely that that will be enough to counteract the shortfall of new commercial bank credit lending and creation. And so, I mean, that could cause inflation. But if banks stop lending as much money, that also puts pressure on a contracting number of currency units, at least right now that would, because credit is considered as good as currency. And so to kind of just summarize the whole episode, I just want to say that commercial banks do create money, which is also credit, if you want to be more specific. And so around like 97% of money is credit created by commercial banks. And I mean, that's one reason why you didn't see inflation in 2008, or, well, let's just say 2008, when they were doing QE and all of this. It's because QE is just printing bank reserves. The Fed creates more bank reserves, and that gives banks a lot more liquidity, but it does not necessarily have to create inflation. And so to summarize again, banks can create credit, which is money, and that is all.